We're in Chechnya, the land of heroes, and there's so much more to this republic than picturesque mountains and valleys. The people here have a deep respect for strength, honour and tradition, and you can see that in all aspects of life. So join us and let's take a deep dive into the heart of the Caucasus. The Nokhchala is the Chechen code of honour. From childhood, boys are raised to be brave, loyal and ready to defend others. It's not just a tradition, it's a whole way of life. So let's find out more. Abdullah, nice to meet you. Peter.
Hello, Peter. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Abdullah, can you tell me about the Nokhchala? What purpose does it serve and why was it developed? Or did it come about organically given the conditions that people lived in back then?
Our ancestors. Our people have lived in the Caucasus for 2,500 years as separate communities. Chechen communities don't have a common state system. A constitution or clearly defined legislation. Those independent communities were self-governed. That lifestyle, however, required certain generally accepted principles and rules of conduct. It was that way of living as free communities in these foreboding mountains that, over the centuries, helped establish a code of honor and morals, which defined what a true Nokhchi should be like. Relations between communities, families, men and women, have always been regulated by these unwritten laws established over centuries, created by life itself, and stemming from the experience of past generations.
Is it true that in Chechnya a friend is valued as much as, if not more than, a brother? And if so, why?
According to Nokhchala, a Chechen family abides by certain principles. There's a strict hierarchy where the father is the head of the family. A younger brother is not equal but subordinate to his brother. The law required younger family members to listen to their older relatives.
I'll tell my younger brother that.
Your friend, however, is your equal. While there was a certain etiquette, a pattern governing the relations between older and younger siblings, your friends were your closest and most trusted people. You can tell your friend something you wouldn't tell your brother. Your friend is a trusty shoulder to rely on. You can trust them with the stuff you wouldn't trust your brother or father with. That's why the Chechens in the Caucasus have always treasured friends.
I like that.
And they're the closest people you can have, according to our code.
I've also heard that when the interests of a family in Chechnya conflict with the wider community, that the Chechen family should put the community's interests first. Is that true?
The family is sacred. The head of the family, the father, only lives for the sake of the family. His only purpose in life is to help his family thrive. The family is a building block of the community. However, for a Chechen who adheres to Nokhchala, we call such people konachs. If the community needs something that's going to harm his family, you must sacrifice on the part of your family to do what the community requires. It used to be shameful to say that your family needed something. When you were working towards a common goal, it would be a disgrace to say you needed to leave or be excused and so on, because there were some family matters you had to attend to. The life of the community was more valuable, and family interests had to be sacrificed sometimes for the benefit of the community.
Abdullah, I know that a sworn oath here is something sacred, it's something worth dying for, and it's taught from a very early age. How do you instill such loyalty
in children.
In a community that abides by Nochchala, what matters is not that if you do something wrong, you'll be punished. What matters is your honor. You can't allow your honor to be dented. If you swear an oath and are true to your word, you're a man of honor. Your dignity depends on it. Empty words have no value. If you promise something, make good on your promise. Your word is seen as an oath. If you keep your word to yourself, you're still its master. But once you've spoken it, you must be a slave to it. You must keep your promise and be a slave to your word now. That's why verbiage is frowned upon. It's not our way. If you've said something, sworn an oath, for a man, a konach, there's no need to swear an oath. His word is enough. There's no need.
Yes, children in every family would be taught from a very early age to be honest. Say someone knocks on your door and you tell your child, "Go tell them I'm not home." That means you're teaching your child how to lie and not keep their word.
It starts at a very early age. Say you're calling out to your child, "Come here, I'll give you something." If you give nothing, it's a lie. We don't do that. These principles can be instilled from early childhood. If you give your word, there's no turning back. You must do it or die trying. A Chechen who respects Nochchala would rather die than promise something and then not do it, and live with that burden on his conscience. So it goes, Peter.
It seems to me still that we're only human, and it's natural to maybe make a mistake or forget to observe a rule or accidentally break one. Would there still be such strict consequences?
Of course, we're all human and we all have our faults. We're not ideal, but we must strive towards it. If you strive and fail, it's okay. You'll get there eventually. But if you don't even try, that's not good. These principles are universal. They make our lives better, improve communication between people, and make you a better person. That's why it's our goal to make sure that Nochchala is observed. But it doesn't mean that everything is 100% ideal.
Abdullah, you mentioned that the Chechen behavioral code dates back well over 1,000 years. Do you think it needs updating for today's society? And do people still observe it as strictly as they used to?
As the older generation, we try to preserve this code and keep it as pure as it was when it was handed down to us. It's our foundation. However, we accept new friends and new ethics that don't contradict these baseline principles. We grow and our thinking evolves as well. We realize how complicated relations between people, nations, and languages have become. Still, the foundational principles of this code, 40 or 48 of them, must remain intact. That doesn't exclude using the benefits of new technology. For example, the Adhan used to be recited from a rooftop, but now we use loudspeakers to record it.
The Lezginka, it isn't just a dance. It's an ancient ritual, once performed before battle or a hunt. It's fast, fierce, and full of pride. Let's see it in action. The Lezginka dates back to ancient times, and the ritual dances that were performed before battles, before hunts, they tell a story. What is it?
Yes, it's a historical dance from ancient times. It reflects the state of the human soul. It's a valuable cultural phenomenon that has survived until the present, and we preserve its integrity and ethnic identity. A boy and a girl dancing opposite each other shows, first and foremost, respect for each other. It's a silent dialogue. It's a conversation between these young people, and its beauty and purity reflect our history. This dance shows how pure those relationships were, how much respect people had for each other, how much we valued each other. We've been able to preserve this priceless gift until today.
Now, it's often called the Dance of the Eagle, and you can certainly see why, because of the movements of the male performers' arms. They're very much like a bird. What animal do the female dancers represent?
A female dancer represents our women, who are native to the mountains. She will have a long plait. She always keeps her distance. She's modest and gentle. And in this dance, she is so modest and humble that she keeps her eyes down, not letting herself look up at her dance partner. She is full of dignity because she represents her family and all her clan, which we call a type. Certainly, she represents all of the Chechen people, but in particular the clan of its origin and its honor that she is today carrying with her. She is very graceful, and she's not to be approached easily. That's why there's always a distance between a female and a male dancer on the floor. He cannot come close or touch her. He has no right.
Even her clothing?
He has no right to, because it would be disrespectful towards her clan, firstly, and to her origin as a Chechen woman. Also, if a man were to do that, it would be a disgrace for his own family for bringing him up this way. It's very much frowned upon. These are the values that we are still passing on to our children, and they will pass on to the next generation.
And is this why, no matter how long, how exhausting the dance is, the male performer can't leave the circle first? It has to be the woman.
That's right. This Chechen dance is started by a male dancer and finished by a female dancer. In our tradition, it doesn't look good when a female dancer shows off too much during the dance. Everyone knows that. So, when a lady enters the dance, she dances one circle and then must feel and understand when it's enough, because dancing more would not look good. The male dancer leads the way, but the right to finish the dance stays with the female dancer.
And what differentiates the Chechen version of the Lezginka to other versions that are also performed in the Caucasus?
When talking about the Caucasus, people usually call any dance a Lezginka. It's become a habit to call any dance from the Caucasus a Lezginka. But what Chechens have is called a Chechen dance. Do you know how the word Lezginka came to be? There used to be a big port in Dagestan and a big market nearby. And there were travelers from other parts of the world who discovered the Caucasus for themselves. So when they saw some people dancing there on a market square in Dagestan and asked, "Who's dancing?" Some answered, "The Lezgins." That's an ethnic group in Dagestan. And travelers made notes in their diaries that they saw an interesting local dance called Lezginka. And eventually the word spread, and people started calling any dance from the Caucasus a Lezginka, which is not true. The word has been picked up, but it's wrong in many cases. That's how it happened.
In the Caucasus, freestyle wrestling is a test of strength, discipline, and determination. It's very much a battle of minds as well as bodies.
Ahmad, I guess my first question has to be, why do so many freestyle wrestlers come from Chechnya? Is it something in your genes, the culture, even the air?
I'd say there are a lot of champions, not just from Chechnya, but from the Caucasus region in general. It's because wrestling is one of those sports that's massively popular among kids here. Young children are sort of expected to do wrestling. It's a sport that works pretty much every muscle group in the body, and it gets the blood flow into the brain, which in turn has a positive effect on their cognitive development. So by the time these kids go to school, it's easier for them to learn and take in whatever the teachers are explaining to them.
Now, it's not just about strength, although I'm sure that helps. I bet there's a huge psychological aspect to the sport as well. How do you teach your students to maintain their composure and not lose their heads in the middle of a match and focus their strength?
It isn't just us who help the children with that. From a young age, they are taught how to behave in different situations, in conflict, when a lot of things can upset or agitate you. It all starts at home. When they come to train with us, we explain, we show them examples, we tell them, a cool head is your best weapon on the mat. You've got to use your brain. So if you're angry, those emotions cloud your ability to think straight, and that makes you more vulnerable.
I guess the skills that the lads are learning here out on the mat can also be applied to real life as well.
What we have here is a very particular kind of upbringing, a sports upbringing. It's a sports-oriented family. You learn respect, understanding, values, the value of friendship. You learn what it means to help someone, to care, to empathize, to show generosity.
Say a kid walks through the door to your school now. Can you tell instantly if he's capable of becoming a champion or not? And if so, how?
Sometimes you can see early signs in a kid. Not whether they'll be a champion, but whether they have promise, potential, something like that. But it's not always obvious. Sometimes you have to bring it out of them. And a coach has to have the talent to unlock the potential of every child.
Is there any chance I could try a couple of basic moves? I might live to regret this.
Of course, let's do this. Hey, Abdullah.
Peter.
Abdullah.
Can you show me some moves?
Chechen fashion is inspired by centuries-old codes of modesty, strength, and grace. Let's find out how today's designers are transforming that heritage into something both captivating and contemporary.
To the untrained eye, my untrained eye, Chechen traditional dress doesn't look too dissimilar from other outfits in the Caucasus. What makes it uniquely Chechen?
Yes, Caucasian fashion is similar, but Chechen fashion is more reserved and modest. That's a defining trait of the Chechen people.
Now, as you mentioned, it is quite modest. How do Chechen women today express their individuality while keeping within tradition?
We honor and uphold traditions, especially the tradition of covering ourselves. For example, today I wore a dark headscarf to maintain a more covered style. We don't break with tradition. We wear ethnic fashion in a more modern way, but we still follow the customs and traditions. It's about individuality, too. For instance, my scarf today, I chose the color black myself.
What signature Chechen textiles, elements, cuts have survived throughout the ages and are still popular today?
Yes, our outfits have buttons and other elements that add a strong, elegant charm. The buttons are handmade. We still make them this way, staying true to tradition and showing respect to our culture.
The typical Caucasian feminine archetype is that of the mother of the warrior. She's strong, she's stoic, she's resilient. How does Chechen fashion reflect womanhood today?
The overall look remains the same, but we enhance it with modern fabrics and decorations, adding elements like embroidery to enrich it. We try to bring ethnic fashion into a more modern style and showcase it that way. It's especially popular among young people. We respect and value our culture and our rich heritage. The image of the mother doesn't change. It remains just as it always was.
Well, from mothers now to Chechen men, While I've been here, I've seen some Chechen men in traditional dress, and it seems quite rigid and upright. How does this affect their behavior, their posture, and their gait?
Yes, in Chechen men's clothing, it's all about elegance and restraint. That reflects the character of the people. In fact, you could say it even influences how one carries themselves, their posture and walk. That restraint is what makes it so interesting from the outside.
What would you say is the secret to the international success of Chechen fashion? You can see it on catwalks from Paris to Milan. Is it the symbolism behind it, the silhouettes, the elements?
Yes, international designers appreciate our fashion, mainly because we stay true to our culture. We preserve it and take pride in it. That modesty and restraint are what draw attention and make it appealing. The dignity and elegance of the Chechen costume naturally catches the eye of global designers, who often incorporate certain elements and details into their own designs.
Selina, thank you for telling me all about Chechen fashion. Спасибо вам большое.